The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good Monday morning, and welcome to another week of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It's a beautiful day in paradise and partly cloudy, but it's nice. It's nice. I was driving this morning. I kind of need pee. That's right here, man. You know what I'm saying? As a man, I like to drive with my window down this time of year. I can feel that dry air. This is a good time of the year, man. Seriously. And we got to appreciate it, because I'm telling you, when the end of April come and May start to roll in, and that humidity start to do damage, you got to deal with it for a good 6 months. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk to the weather service. I think we have them on the line right now, so they can let us know what to expect for the middle portion of the week, and then we'll get back with them towards the weekend. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning.
Ian.
Yes, Ian. How are you?
¿Qué pasó, hermano? ¿Está bien?
Todo bien.
Okay, good. How's the family? How's everybody?
Yeah, everybody's good. Good.
Well,
came back.
You got
came back.
You went away?
No, my mom.
Oh,
good. You know, we were always flying somewhere.
Okay, good. That's good. It's beautiful in St. Croix. How is it in San Juan? Beautiful too?
It's good now. There's some showers still across the islands.
Well, that's a good thing though.
Yeah, but just people get annoyed with anything. Easily annoyed by the sun, by the rain.
I'm telling you, you're not lying. You are telling the truth.
But a good weather day, they're annoyed.
Everything bothers people. You're absolutely correct.
I know. We have different groups that get bothered by everything. it's just, they're never happy.
I like that. I got a good laugh this morning. Look, when I was driving in, I could feel the dry air, and it was kind of cool.
San Croix has been dry, at least when compared with the northern Virgin Islands or Vieques and Culebra. San Croix has been dry, at least for the last few days. I know.
We've gotten a good amount of rain for the first 60 days, though.
I know. I remember radar analysis show about 4 or 5 inches. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday last week.
Then a week before.
Yeah, and then nothing after that.
Nothing. You're right.
Yeah. So it's which is okay. I mean, it's not okay, but typical, since we have northeasterly winds,
mm-hmm.
and everything pretty much stays over northern Puerto Rico, Vieques, Culebra, and San Thomas and St. John.
But over the weekend, it got kind of nippy, it got kind of cold. What was that all about?
Yeah, it's because of these northeasterly winds.
The northeasterly winds, okay.
Northeasterly winds usually bring cooler temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
We got some overnight, passing showers and things like that. If you're talking about overnight, you guys have been experiencing pretty clear nights.
Yeah.
And with that, you get cooler temperatures, since there's nothing to radiate back that heat to land areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you lose all that heat, to space, and you get cooler. But it should continue at least today and tomorrow. And then Wednesday onwards, we may see some easterly and then southeasterly winds. So things are going to warm up by the end of the week.
Well, we like it like it is now. You know what I'm saying? Because like I was saying, once April and May gets here and it starts to get humid, we don't want any part of that. That could be rough, because in the morning times, it's real nice now. But when the humidity starts acting up, morning times are kind of rough too, man.
Yeah, we have right now at the airport 80 degrees.
That's perfect.
But that's not bad. I mean, but it's 8 a.m., so
mm-hmm.
we'll see. I'm looking right now as I'm talking to you, yesterday's observations, to see how it was in the islands. Let's see. I think it was 85 or something. 88.
No, that's
88 in the airport, and then 89 at our station. Well, not our, but raw stations on the eastern side of the island.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's getting warmer still.
You guys have infrastructure here up at Kramer's Park?
Who puts
the infrastructure up there, or the, at the different locations in the Virgin Islands?
That was before my time, so I probably have to look for that.
But you guys have access to that, right? Those are the points where you guys use to determine the weather, right?
That's what I'm trying to get to. It's not like an automatic station, so actually someone has to go and report it.
Okay.
So let's say, for example, you guys have a significant weather event
mm-hmm.
for a few hours. We don't really get that information, like, on time. Like live, we'll have to wait probably the next day. But those stations are usually for climatology purposes. So at the end of the year, you know, every 10 years, we do look at what happened using those stations. But it's nothing really to use as something is developing over the area. For that, we do use the airport, for example, and there's some other stations around, like the Ross stations over Cotton Valley. That's on the eastern side, and the airport is southwest. There's nothing really on your tropical forest. There's nothing really, no observing stations up there.
Now with the buoys though, you guys, there's telemetry. On the buoys, right?
But the buoy, you don't have any buoy around the St. Croix, at least.
No. The one in St. John. The St. John buoy.
Oh, yeah, the one in St. John.
Yeah.
You do have like a coastal, like in one of your caves, there's like a, in Lime Tree Bay, there's like an NWLON station with measures similar to what the buoy does, but it's mostly coastal and, you know, see like sea changes and things like that.
Yeah, because I'm looking at the buoy right now, right? Caricus.org.
Yeah, right?
And the water temperature is 80.2 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh.
The air temperature is 80.1, right?
Mm-hmm.
And barometric pressure, 1,014.8. And the salinity, SF. What's SF for salinity? Tu sabes?
SF.
Yeah, salinity. The sensor depth
at 3.2 feet. Right now, salinity.
Yeah, I'll check.
You know what really helps?
What?
Google. I don't know what
so you want to be a comedian this morning. I thought you were a meteorologist, but
I'm
you want to be a comedian.
Sorry.
No, man, I like that.
I truly don't know what SF means.
No, I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah,
you set me up, man. That was a good one. I like that one.
This is like salinity SF, que significa? SF, esa unidad, ¿qué significa?
Mm-hmm.
You see, I asked her, and she's doing the same thing.
Everybody going to Google, right? Everybody going to Google.
Like, what is that?
Yeah.
But the truth is like...
But the water temperature and the air temperature is the same, though, 80.2, 80.1?
It's close. I mean,
yeah.
we just transitioned from night to day, so it should be really close. But once it starts warming up, especially in the islands, you know, that heat and everything is going to warm up. I mean, of course, the water doesn't warm up as... Earth or land,
mm-hmm.
but we'll see warming of the islands, and then the water should stay pretty cool, at least 1 or 2 degrees higher maximum during the day.
The marine condition for our boaters and our beachgoers. What's that looking
like? Oh my
like?
God, no. So we have, you know, we've been having like windy conditions in the area.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. So with that and a northerly swell, it's not a significant one, but the combination will maintain hazardous marine conditions for small craft. So we should be seeing 7 to 8 feet during the next few days. I think at least until early Wednesday, if I'm not wrong. Early Wednesday. So we have small craft advisories in effect for the waters north of St. Thomas and St. John and
mm-hmm.
for eastern waters of St. Croix. That means the Anegada Passage. And also, of course, all the Atlantic waters are under small craft advisory. And also, St. Croix at least remains under high rip current risk, so especially those easternmost beaches of the island. So be careful if anybody is thinking about going to the beach today mm-hmm. or the next few days. Just consider that. Perhaps anything on the south-southwest may be more tranquil or better fit, especially for kids and elderly people.
Hey, I Googled the SF, man.
Oh, what did you get?
San Francisco.
At least you got that, because I got salinity. At least I got salinity.
No, I'm just having some fun here.
Usually in salinity, it's usually parts per million or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, but
okay. No, the sensor. It says right because you know they got the water temperature and they got the sensor depth at 3.28, right? 80.2 Fahrenheit, right? Then the air temperature, the sensor elevation is at 9.85 feet, and the temperature is 80.1 degrees Fahrenheit. The barometric pressure, right? The sensor elevation is at the 9.85. So it's at, like I mentioned, 1,014.8 millibars. And then salinity, the sensor depth is at 3.28 feet. So clearly, that got to do with the salt, man. That's the salt something, right? Because it's underwater, right?
Yeah, it's pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, the sensor depth. So it has something to do with the salt and all that stuff. So they say the tide is falling. Actual level is 0.6 feet. Last high tide was 3 hours ago, 3 hours and 60 minutes ago. The next low tide is at 12 and a half hours from now. So that would be from 7 o'clock this morning, 12 and a half, about 7:30?
I'd say 8:30 the next high tide.
8:38,
I see. No.
Okay.
I have to look, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you're doing like questions that we...
No, you're right, the next low tide is at 8:38 p.m., correct?
Yeah, that's right? The one, my bad.
And the one is at 5 a.m. And the high tide is at 5:46, correct?
Yeah, I'm looking at the same thing. But
with all due respect, Ian, this is awesome that we could actually Google these type of things on catecoos.org, which is a very informational website because it tells you literally everything with respect to, surroundings.
Actually, but one thing that you didn't notice and is that
educate me, baby.
That buoy hasn't reported since 5 a.m.
I said that the 5 a.m. That was the 5 a.m. But the data that I just gave you with respect to the tides, right?
The
last update was at 7:54 a.m. So that was less than 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. So usually with tide wise, it's periodical.
Mm-hmm.
So the forecast is usually pretty close, really good. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really change.
Waves maximum height 4.4 feet. It's coming from the east, right?
Yes.
And every 5.7 seconds.
One of the good things about that buoy is, well, not good, but the thing is that it's protected from all the energy coming from the north.
Protected, because the buoy is south of St. John.
So if there's an northerly swell or increasing winds like it is right now, it's not going to really reflect the conditions on the northern side.
Mm-hmm.
But again, mm-hmm. that was before my time. Somebody put it there.
but you're here now, you know what I'm saying? So we're glad. Ryan Chambers, he had come over to St. John.
And he
guess he went up into the mountains. He said he loved it up there. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Actually, I may come to St. Croix in a cruise, so we'll see. And I haven't been in St. Croix in a few years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't installed any of the stations you asked before, but we have gave maintenance. So I've been in St. Croix. There's a Dominican restaurant near the supermarket that it was really good. I always remember that lady from the USPS.
I know what you're talking about, man. I know what you're talking about.
It's amazing.
So you're flying to Miami and coming down here?
No, we flew directly with...
No, you said you're taking a cruise. You said you're taking a cruise. So you're going to...
No. And I mean, if we do, it's from here.
Okay, so you're going to home port in San Juan, right?
Yeah.
And then you'll make a stop in St. Croix.
In St. Croix, yeah.
Well, let me know, man. Let me know.
Sure, I'll let you know.
So we could work that out and get together and all that good stuff, man.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I've been there before.
But I want to meet you guys, you know what I'm saying? And Robert comes here ever so often to check on his moms.
I know. I don't know when was the last time, but it's good.
Yeah. Ian Colón, muchas gracias, man. Thank you very much. Great conversation this morning.
You got it. Have a good day, man.
Enjoy the day. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's not Ian Colón. Yo, we like family, man. When he calls in, you know, we have fun and all that stuff, you know. So we had fun. He caught me, and then I caught him back, right? He told me, SF, you want to find out what SF is? Go to Google. And then I let him know that's San Francisco, you know. So we're good. No, it's going to be a good day today. Be a nice day. I can see the clouds actually starting to, you know, wither away, you know. So it'll be a good day. I just got the new edition of Take 12. Shauna Richards from the bookcase. Grace is the cover, right? It says join Shauna K. Richards every Monday at 8 p.m. on the bookcase. As a matter of fact, tonight, I normally do the update at the 9 o'clock hour, the midway point of the show. But the bookcase is on tonight. That's from 8 to 8:30. Yeah, nice photo of Shauna Richards. And then Tom Ader. I believe Tom Ader made history on Danny because Tom Ader... was on the cover of last month, and he's on the cover of this month again, down on the bottom. He's sharing it with he had an interview with Dan Aykroyd, the Dan Aykroyd interview. So he did that. Him and Jeff, we had Dan Aykroyd on a couple Tuesdays ago, and they did a song. You know what I mean? Good morning. The Blues Brother, Elwood Blues. You know what I'm saying? So this was nice. You know, and Jeff Tarilla, you know, he's a musician and the producer. So there's a nice interview article here in the middle of the March 2024 edition of Take 12. Okay? So you're gonna like that. So make sure you get a copy. Don't forget, you know, don't hesitate to get membership with WTJX family. You know what I'm saying? You want to be a part of that. A lot of benefits, a lot of good stuff. You know what I'm saying? And then, of course, overall access to public broadcasting and NPR. Can't lose, right? It's like one of those horses, you know, when they're in the stretch and the Jamaican, them down the track and say, can't lose. Soup. You know what I mean? Same thing with Take 12. Membership. I mean, same thing with membership to WTJX family. Cannot lose. That's a win-win proposition right there. And then, of course, on the back page, Marcelina Ventura Douglas with the WTJX news feed and all of that good stuff. We got a good show lined up. I want to send out condolences to the family of Hugh Pemberton. Mr. P apparently unfortunately passed away over the weekend at the age of 76. So I was listening to that. My mom's, you know, before my love affair with WTJX, you know, I've had side flings and relationships with WSTX and done some interviews on the reef and all that stuff. So we're all one big family, you know. So we want to WRRA, right? That's 1290. And I think WHDP, I think that's the name of the FM station. So, Mr. Pemberton, a staunch advocate for St. Croix. Well, matter of fact, we're going to have a great discussion and table talk when Ronnie Russell joins us, because Ronnie and I were in the legislature back in 2011 when the middle mile for VINGN, the legislation that required some financing, $112 million or thereabouts. I pull up the story. So Ronnie and I, we're going to revisit that. Have a good conversation with respect to that. Communications in general and a number of different things. Crazy developments taking place on the mainland. America really in a bad social position today, you know. You know, that's unfortunate, you know. So we're going to have a good table talk. Doug Skoll going to be joining us. I don't know if Rocky going to call in at 9 o'clock, but I know he's still on assignment. And he's going to be back towards the latter part of this month. But he did mention that he might be calling in at 9 o'clock, so we'll see. Okay? So, that's what we're going to do. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll kick in with the table talk. A lot of things to talk about here on the first Monday in March of 2024. A tenth of the month done gone already. Time is flying in 2024. Okay, be back right after this.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1. Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party, or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression, and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Monday morning, welcome back to Analyze This. Like I said, it's a beautiful day in paradise. And the boys are back. You know what I'm saying? We got Rodney Russell joining us from St. Croix. Good morning, Mr. Senate President, the 29th Legislature, four-term senator out of the West. Now hanging out in the Kenan Valley. What's up?
Everything is up, Neville. And it's a pleasure to be on the show. But, you know, we as a territory and as a nation, we're facing our difficulties, but we could get through it.
So, I agree.
Good morning to everybody.
I like that internal optimism. It's good. And joining us from St. Thomas de Handel, the majority leader of the 30th legislature, a three-term senator from the District of St. Thomas, St. John Donald Duck School. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Let me say, President, please. Good morning to the listening and viewing audience throughout the islands, the nation, and the world.
Without a doubt.
You, my brother. Morning, Ronnie.
That's what I'm talking
about. Morning, Doc. Morning.
That's what I'm talking about. George Goodwin lives forever. And, of course, the ranking member is on assignment. He'll be joining us maybe today at 9, but at some point in the future. Gentlemen, first of all, I want to send out condolences to the family of Hugh Pemberton, Ronnie Russell. When I joined the legislature in 2005, I had no idea that his reach and his impact was broad as it was, in particular here on St. Croix. I was connected on the WSTX side, but Reef Broadcasting were doing significant damage, like we just said, here in the territory in a good way. So we want to send our condolences to him and his family.
Absolutely. Him and his family. And all of his supporters. He had a lot of people supporting him. He had a lot of followers here in St. Croix and St. Thomas, too. So, mm-hmm. You know. Yeah. So, it's an really sincere condolences, yeah.
Without a doubt. And at Duck School, Mr. Pemberton was from St. Kitts or Nevis?
St. Kitts.
You're from St. Kitts, right? But he had opened up a radio station down in Nevis, right? Well, Nevis it was, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Radio Caribbean or radio something?
Down in Nevis, yes. I just want to say my condolences also to Mr. P and Granny, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Granny might be feeling this one.
Well, you know.
To all his fans, I remember Mr. P. When I used to play Mass in Carnival here in St. Thomas, I look forward to Mr. P in, you know, interview once I got up to Post Office Square, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Mr. P was broadcasting live back to the Big Island and throughout, you know what I mean? So plus his utilizing his radio station, you know, as a point of information and news and cultural events. Thus, we have lost a good one.
Now, Ronnie, let me go back to your presidency, right? It was early in your presidency when Governor DeYoung sent down a proposal, right, for the middle mile. Remember that one?
Yes.
And you called for a committee of the whole hearing so we could have received testimony, and it went all day long, right? And it was about some ARA monies that had what was made available to all the states, all the jurisdictions, and in our case, the total cost for the project, right? I pull up the story here, right? The total cost for the project was about $112 million, of which $70 million was in federal funds. So we needed to float. Okay, here we go. $68 million in federal funds, and the authorization of bonds for another $42 million would bring it up to $110 million. Right? They say the bill authorizes the issuance of up to $42 million in gross receipts tax bonds to help finance the broadband project, which has pulled in multiple ARA grant awards for the territory. The receipt of federal stimulus funds also comes with tight deadlines for spending and implementation, which has left the Public Finance Authority and the Virgin Islands Next Generation Network, a subsidiary of the PFA, set up to oversee the project and man the network, scrambling to meet the mandates. Ronnie, if I can recall correctly, Mr. Pemberton, because he had owned significant amount of infrastructure, but that have to do with his pipe, was a testifier. And in retrospect, Ronnie, the legislature got the shorthand again from the administration, where they were rushing things with us with pretty much a gun to our head. And, you know, a great idea, but poor execution.
Yeah, and we flush it out because, you know, a lot of questions came up, whether who would benefit from it. And when it came down to it, when you said a shorthand, Neville, the legislature has always been behind the eight ball in a lot of projects because of how the administrations brought it to the legislature. The last minute.
Yeah, man. Gone to the head approach, timeline and deadline and all kind of thing.
Yep. It's always been that way because the structure of the Revised Organic Act and the way we do things here gives the executive branch an upper hand, you know. And we know our constitution might rectify that, but so we tried our best, and it has benefited the territory greatly because we got the infrastructure. How the money was spent and the timeline and everything left a lot to be desired, but we got it done. And Mr. Pemberton was an integral part of that. You know, he testified, and he owned part of the infrastructure. So, you know, long and short, it ended up pretty good for the territory, but it had a rocky start.
Mm-hmm. Now, Docs, you were a PSC member and then the executive director, right? The middle mile is the physical fiber optic infrastructure needed to enable internet connectivity. It's made up of high-capacity fiber lines that carry large amounts of data at high speeds over long distances. And I want the public to know, it's data, not data. We're dancing, Croy, it's data, right? An open access network gives providers and entities access to broadband infrastructure that will allow any networks to connect on equal economic and service terms. Talk about some of the oversight that you've experienced being a PSC member and executive director as it relates to broadband and the middle mile.
Yes, Neville. The middle mile project brought put the infrastructure in place for connectivity. But what is the middle mile? The last mile was now left to ISPs.
Yeah, the internet service providers.
Providers. Yeah. And what happened at the same time that we received the monies from the federal government for VINGN, by telco, via, back then.
Innovative at the time.
Yeah. Was putting down infrastructure too.
Yes, yes.
And we were looking towards Vitelco via to be one of the big ISPs, right? To distribute the broadband after the middle mile. So it created a lull in terms of getting that broadband to the public as it was supposed to, because now one of your number one expected ISP was now also had infrastructure in the ground, thus they were doing their own thing.
That's why that's why I told Rani, right, the execution was not good, because it seems like there was not the level of communication as it relates to, you know, how we could benefit the territory. It looks like it was just a rush to float bonds and not have the right kind of due diligence being done, because it created some acrimony between private sector entities and the government of the Virgin Islands.
That is true. And you spoke about the fact that there were deadlines and spending the money.
Mm-hmm.
The money had to be spent in a specific period of time. As a matter of fact, I believe we had to get an extension on spending the money. So, in the end, when they built all the different stations to carry the VINGN, to carry the fiber to the middle mile, the problem became never the availability of ISPs
mm-hmm.
to distribute the fiber throughout. And we really expected... The Department of Education level was supposed to be one of the big benefactors of that middle mile infrastructure, to put that technology in the classrooms. And what happened was that didn't come out the way it was supposed to. I know they had just built the Turnbull Library over in the Tutu Park Mall area, and it became a center where a lot of computers were set up and the technology was available there. But it took a while for it to be dispersed throughout the community. And the PSC really didn't have much authority to deal with that issue. It was a federal, and it went through the FCC. So that middle mile aspect really didn't fall under the jurisdiction of the Public Services Commission. And that is where they set up that office out of the Public Services, the Public Finance Authority. And I think Mr. Julito Francis was the individual who was in charge of VINGN when they created that semi-autonomous agency.
Yes, yes, yes.
WAPA became part owner because we had to use the WAPA line.
And the conduits. The conduits. Yeah.
Yeah, to transmit that stuff. So it was a good thing, as you say, but had some problems bringing it out.
No, Ronnie, based on what you're hearing there, Ronnie, right? I know when you hear him talk, then things start to come back to you, right? We got the impression, as members of the 29th legislature, that this was done intentionally as it relates to the timing.
Exactly.
Talk a little bit about that dynamic that we had to deal with really on a consistent basis, and not limited to that administration. This is administration in, administration out.
Yeah, you see, if you put a deadline that is set by the federal government and you wait as the administration to come to the legislature to look for money, to look for resources, at the last minute, the gun is always at your head.
it was done with the Cigna insurance. It was done in a lot of areas that we were involved in as a legislature to appropriate money, to appropriate laws, to get money, you know, various things. In this case, what happened was the money we needed to match, there was a deadline. And you know what? Other problem existed. I think they brought in, you know, a Puerto Rican firm to dig up the road. And while they were digging up the road, you know, VIA was doing it. And it was a pretty big confusion as to, you know, how the infrastructure would be set up.
As a matter of fact, I'm not afraid to admit it, Ronnie. We were learning on the go.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, I know people want to believe, senators might want to give the public the impression that they know everything. But I'm here to tell you that nobody knows everything. And we were learning on the go about the connectivity and the infrastructure.
And how the law was set up to set up the ISPs and the middle mile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was, we were supposed to get free service for nonprofits and as Docs mentioned, for education.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen the way it was supposed to happen. And we, not knowing the entire scope of that project in the legislature, we were behind the eight ball. We had to make decisions quickly without all of the information. And, you know, in hindsight, the structure of how things are done with the executive branch and the legislature, it needs to change, because the legislature is always put, and the legislature is the representative of the people,
mm-hmm.
and the executive branch is supposed to just execute. But then they are determining policy by changing the timing and making it, you know, a rush to get things done because federal dollars attached to it. And there's a timeline to spend the federal dollars. And that's how it has operated, so that the legislature is left having to make a split decision to benefit the people, because the executive branch, you know, wants to hold the all the cards, and the legislature just have to go along. So,
basically what you're saying, Ronnie, is the executive branch want to be like Doc School. They got a handle, right? And me and you. And me and you got a blade. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah. But our situation, and we're going to a break in another minute, our situation was even more complicated because of that pipe, Ronnie, right?
Yes.
That pipe that is right there off the Northwest. And Pemberton, Hugh Pemberton, I believe he had bought a significant amount of access to that pipe, right?
Yeah, and he had exclusive
access. Exclusive, right, to take it from the north side down there to Sofarelli, down to Walter I.M. Hodge, right? To get it to Center Line Road, because if you take Center Line Road, for those of you who are driving on St. Croix, if you take Center Line Road all the way down, don't turn onto Emancipation Drive. Just go straight down. That will take you down to the Walter I.M. Hodge Pavilion, and it runs all the way down there, right? And then...
Yeah.
The access goes north, right? So that's, you know, that was, you know, looking back at it, and Ronnie, we getting older now. That was 13 years ago this month. Jeez, some bread, yep. Ronnie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Time flying.
Yep.
So we take a break, come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what we could do. We're going to use this platform to talk about communications, talk about some suggestions for infrastructure to allow for us to continue to evolve, because communications are big issue here, along with alternative energy. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station, in the Virgin Islands.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
From 2 to 4 on WTJX-FM, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here on Analyze This, a great conversation, talking communications, of course, in light of the passing of Mr. Hugh Pemberton, a radio station owner here in the Virgin Islands, among with other businesses. He also had a radio station in St. Kitts Nevis. And what that was, Doc? ZIZ 90.7? That was his station, or was another one? Doc's call. You know what? You know what's the call for the radio station down in St. Kitts Nevis? It was ZIZ.
In St. Kitts, it's ZIZ, yeah, not ZIZ. ZIZ.
ZIZ. I agree. That was his station, or that was another station?
No. That was his station.
Okay, another one. Okay. No. Doc's, you're right, because in Totola is ZBVI, right?
ZBVI, the British pronunciation of
Z. Yeah.
Okay, and they call zero not.
Not. I like that. Not. Yeah. Ronnie, you hear the Queen's English this morning, right?
Yeah.
And look, remember when we were growing up, Ronnie, when we would listen to ZBVI, which is 7:80 a.m., right?
Yes.
Right? He used to got a man named the Funky Man, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was a fireman. He passed away, right?
Yeah,
he was a great DJ. And said, he had lived in St. Thomas and used to go over to Totola to work on the station, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
He was out of
Sweet Bay, man. Funky Man.
Funky Man. And look, he had a special voice, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. By the way, for those who are listening, right, the Virgin Islands Next Generation Network is a public corporation, right? A wholly owned subsidiary of the Virgin Islands Public Finance Authority. VINGN was primarily funded by grants from the Department of Commerce with a charter to provide wholesale broadband middle mile service to providers to promote local economic growth, innovation, and global competitiveness. And 2011 was the year that it was born. And Ronnie Russell at the time, right, was the leader, the first branch of government in the Virgin Islands. He was the Senate President. We had this legislation that came down. Ronnie, one of our problems, right, and I want the public to listen to this, right, looking back at it, now I had a skepticism with that administration, and that was unfortunate. I go looking back saying that, you know. But here's the reason why I had the skepticism. We had $68 million of federal funding, and the project cost $110 million, according to what they said, Ronnie, right? Now, Innovative at the time, they were laying down, I believe, $70 million of their own or something like that, right?
Exactly. Right?
So, I think Innovative's thinking was, well, why not let us be a partner? Right?
Exactly.
We got the federal money, right? No, I'm speaking out loud of how innovative I was looking at it. You got the federal money, which is the government. We got private sector money. Mr. Pemberton owned the infrastructure. WAPA had a role in this because, as Doc mentioned, there was access that we had that was required that WAPA had already, and that created some controversy, right? And some conflict, I should say, between the government and these entities as well. But one more thing that we want the public to know: whenever we float bonds, Ronnie Russell and Doc School, isn't there a private sector entity that makes money off of this, Ronnie Russell?
Absolutely. And the problem was, it was a perfect situation for a public-private partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And I had strong opposition to it being a separate entity created to be run by the PFA. You know, mm-hmm. I thought they would, you put it under a department who deals with information, education might have been good, and it should be, accessible to the public because it is a public venture. And I thought it was a perfect situation for a private-public partnership instead of how it was done. But, as I said, we were behind the eight ball and we couldn't come up with ideas to implement a new structure because it was forced on us.
And we had the time variable that was working against us as a legislature.
Yes. So, but, I thought it was the perfect opportunity to create a department in the executive branch accessible to the public, like how everything in education, health, everything, to form the private-public partnership and use via, instead of digging up the roads and the roads created a problem, and do it. But, it had a different tenor with the administration, and we were behind the eight ball to pass the measures to get the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But this is something that is a consistent problem with serving the public.
And that's why we analyze this, right, on this show.
Yes.
Because these are the things that we need to correct going forward. If there are any contributions that we're going to make, our generation of leadership, according to Doc's role, generation
done,
right? then we got to that. Also, another variable complicating the situation was, I believe, Innovative might have still been in that receivership window at that time, right?
It was. Yep. And Neville, one of the things I don't know, because I don't remember what the federal government said in terms of we getting the money, that it had to be a separate entity.
Yeah, The
reason they put it under the PFA was, the PFA in terms of spending money and allocating money and stuff was the entity that they believe, to spend the federal money, because you have to keep a check on everything.
Not only that, remember the PFA is not an executive branch entity,
Right.
Yeah. So I believe that was that might have been a good spot. And that part of it, I don't think is there was a problem there. We just had a problem, Ducks, with how every time as legislatures, right? There's something coming up. There's always this deadline, with the gun to the head approach. And it was, looking back at it, it's insulting. And it's not limited to that administration. I'm talking year in, year out, administration in, administration out. They do it all the time, and it's bad, man. It's bad. That's why you have senators sometimes opposing deals just on principle and not necessarily because of the nature of the deal. You follow what I'm saying, Ducks?
You're absolutely correct. I mean, we face that every time. And I think...
With the health insurance plan, right? Remember that was an issue?
The health insurance that comes down a week. And if you don't pass it, then everybody gonna be out of insurance.
Yeah.
We have projects that came down. I mean, it happens every time. And Ronnie is correct. The Organic Act gives a lot of power to the executive branch.
Mm-hmm.
The governor has a lot of power, and we are here.
But
the other aspect I was thinking, Neville, is that I remember when we passed the UVI park. We set up the UVI Park.
The RT Park. Yeah.
The RT Park. Yeah. To the University of the Virgin Islands that is over there in St. Croix, and the connectivity with the Global Crossing network that you were speaking about, getting that signal over there, that would be so beneficial to us.
But I'm glad you went there because Wallace Williams reminded us, right, that Pemberton received ownership. This is our understanding, right? The right of lines, right, that his company was constructing for Global Crossing to Frederickstead. That's how we end up, Ronnie, with the ownership, right? Because he was doing work with his company here on the island. And at the same time, I believe Global Crossing had their financial issues and went into bankruptcy, right? Yeah, so that's a good segue there, Docs. Go ahead.
The network that was supposed to come out of that with UVI, and I've heard you basically said that you are Mason, you're, what do you call it, for the park?
Yeah, a mercenary.
that's your terminology.
Yeah, a mercenary.
For the park.
Mm-hmm.
So we were basically, Neville, sitting on the edge and in the middle of that Global Crossing where we could have, the technology that we, you know, would have taken us to another level, Neville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that was critical in terms of how this thing was rolled out. But you had these conflicting thing. I mean, when Via put down over $70 million worth of stuff, is how are you going to use the conduits underground? And that became very complex.
And that was a whopper deal. That's where Hugo Hatch at the time as executive director was making an argument on behalf of the project, right? And what had happened, right, was it was a big falling out on it because at the time, right, Hugo and Mario were very, very tight, right? Mm-hmm. And Mario Moorhead were working for Hugh Pemberton at the time, right? And they felt, Mr. Pemberton felt they were getting shut out of the deal even though he was the man that owned the infrastructure, at least critical connecting infrastructure, and that created. I remember that, you know, we got me and Mario at the time. Me and Mario and me and Hugo were good. We were good, and to see that happen like that was unfortunate. But it wasn't even a Hugo issue. It wasn't Hugo's fault. It was the administration once again at the time. You know that deadline component, Ronnie, right? Creating again, you know, unnecessary falling outs, for the lack of a better term, that did not benefit anyone and hurt us going forward.
Yeah. You know something? It's a plague against the people when one branch of government exercises an inordinate amount of power.
Yes, sir.
And what happens is the people suffer because the people's representatives elected every 2 years are always... They lack information, and they get things late. I could remember when Global Crossing came in,
mm-hmm.
and I was hired by, the director of planning and research and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened when they came in? They were willing to give the government instead of pay money. Giving government ownership access between Miami and St. Croix and the administration without a policy set in place by the legislature how to deal with this new technology, the administration did their own thing.
Now, check this out.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah, check this out. We want to educate the public, right? Global Crossing, right? Attracted widespread media attention after filing for bankruptcy in January of 2002. This bankruptcy occurred amidst an accounting scandal in which had allegedly inflated its reported earnings figures. And Docs, I'm going to come back to Ronnie a little bit, but I want to go to you, Docs. Docs, we hear this over and over again with these private sector companies, man, right? Where they start making so much money and then they want to live like the Joneses, right? But they don't have the Joneses money, even though they got money. So they start inflating their value so they could go to the banks and get loans because, well, they're figuring, well, we're making money, so we don't have a problem paying off the loans. And then you stop making money because business is cyclical.
It is, and we have a present day issue right now with someone who is seeking the office of things. Neville, another factor that was the Butler Bay situation with the bentonite mud.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah, but I remember that. Yeah. This was in the early 2000s when you were a senator, right?
Yeah, and absolutely. I chaired the committee, and I think environmental protection. But like I said, that was also an issue in there in terms of how you're going to clean up this mud and the impact that it had on the ecosystem over there in Butler Bay. And that also affected the company.
Mm-hmm. They said check this out right here, some key takeaways. Global Crossing was a large telecommunications provider whose famous bankruptcy in January 22 followed that of the Enron Corporation in December 2001, right? At the time, Global Crossing's bankruptcy was the fourth largest in U.S. history. The company was known for its aggressive and allegedly fraudulent accounting practices. Mm-hmm. It even explored a potential transaction with Enron that would have inflated each company's respective revenues by $650 million. And this is over 20 years ago, right? In 2004, Global Crossing settled numerous lawsuits for alleged securities fraud. And in 2011, Global Crossing was acquired by Level 3 Communications in a deal valued at $3 billion. Would it be?
And Neville, Rani, the thing is, legislators, the senators have to weave through all of these issues we're planning this thing on a timetable.
Yes, sir.
You understand what I'm saying? So the decision-making becomes so critical that we're looking at saving and making sure we meet the deadline and all of that and make sure we get a technology because at that point in time, the reason why the Virgin Islands got so much money under that fund is because we were at the bottom of the totem pole.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of telecommunication and connectivity and broadband and all of that.
So but check this out. Check this out.
We don't want to lose. Don't want to lose that because we want to increase. So you're making decisions with all of these variables out there that we don't comprehend.
And before we go to break, quickly check this out. Right at the time of its bankruptcy in January 2002. Global Crossing held assets over $20 billion, and they end up settling for $3 billion. So 85% of its value, Ronnie, gone, right? Because to settle for bankruptcy. We're going to a break. When we come back, right, we have a quick visit. We got some Central High students. They're doing a tour here in the building. So they're going to come in to talk to us about 3 or 4 minutes or 5 minutes. And then we're going to get back to some other big issues as well. So we'll take a break and be back right after this here on the Table Talk. Be right back.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Planes, a growing part of the climate emergency.
Aviation is going to become one of the top polluters if we don't act right now.
But could electric power change the equation?
Electric motors are within that edge of possible.
New technology,
flying taxis or cars,
could decide who wins.
We are doing something to change the world.
The great electric airplane race on Nova.
Tune in March 6th at 11 p.m. on WTJX TV channel 12.